How's it going? And welcome to episode 226 of On the Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I am Adam Howe, joined as always by Kevin Hastings. Thank you all for listening or watching, or both, hopefully both. And we've got a great show lined up for you. We are still, I think, catching our breath, Kevin, from last week's episode. Good job on us for sticking with it for, I think we, it was just a 2.5 hour episode. No big deal.
Closer to 2.5 than 3 hours. Yeah, yes. So
yeah,
we'll go 2.5.
Well, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Adam. Thank you so much. Great being here. Been a busy week. So I absolutely love this on Fridays after I've had a busy week. Less than 2 months to go, way less than 2 months to go. I think after this week, 6 more fab runs. And, you know, I got to start bringing it up, Adam, especially since I did miss it last year. Less than 3 months till first pitch Arizona.
There it is.
getting things booked, ready to roll.
Nice. Yeah, if you haven't checked that out, obviously go head over to, just do a quick Google search. First pitch Arizona. You can't miss it.
It's all right on the front page at baseballhq.com.
Yeah, check it out. All right, well, we'll get into it. We don't have nearly as much news as last week, but still plenty of stuff. Of course, there's always going to be injuries, but honestly, there's a lot of anti-injury news that we're going to talk about, where guys are going on rehabs, they were expecting them back. Some guys we haven't seen in a very long time. So let's get into it, but we're going to start off with the brand new guys we haven't seen at all, and that is the call-ups. San Francisco Giants are set to call up Drew Gilbert, who they received from their trade with the New York Mets at the deadline for Tyler Rogers. He was part of that package. What are your expectations for Drew Gilbert in San Francisco, and what kind of role do you think he can play in our bidding this weekend?
Well, I think this might be kind of sneaky, a nice ad here, because the Giants have had some issues with right field recently, and Drew Gilbert is in the lineup on Friday as we're recording in right field. Where do they have him hitting? Hitting ninth, okay. We can expect that. But, I mean, they had Gerard Encarnacion play right field for a couple games, right back to the IL, right? Prior to that, they had been giving Grant McRae a shot. That will be interesting to see over the rest of the weekend, McRae and Gilbert here. But the thing that's intriguing to me with Drew Gilbert is that he only has 6 stolen bases on the season in over 400 plate appearances, 93 games at AAA this year. However, 2 of those 6 have come in the 5 games since he was acquired by the Giants organization from the New York organization. So maybe there's an organizational thing here, something they saw. He's got a 55 speed grade on his prospect report. So that I think this could be a sneaky stolen base play, depending on what we see over the rest of the weekend. It is still up in the air. You know, they had only let McRae start 3 games out there, and then they were trying Encarnacion. He's back on the IL. So monitored over the weekend. But if it looks like that Drew Gilbert's going to get this time, at least versus righties, then I think it's a nice speed play.
Yeah, that last comment you made, you know, against righties is as good a time as any to bring up the new feature over at Roster Resource that Jason just announced, where you can look up their depth charts and you can toggle over to the platoon lineups. And of course, I mean, it's just great to be able to see those side by side and be able to toggle those as you like. Of course, Drew Gilbert one day, hard to say, but is expecting him to be in a platoon batting ninth against righties and coming off the bench against lefties. We'll see how that works out for the foreseeable future though. All right. Well, we got another call up, not a debut though. This is Washington calling up Cade Cavalli. You might thought it was his debut because we haven't seen him in so long, but he did make his MLB debut back in August of 2022, has not been in the majors since. And here we are back in August 2025, making his season debut this week. Now he's available, has not been available to be picked up until this week. Do you expect this to kind of stick now that we're past the trade deadline? We're going to let Cavalli just kind of run with it throughout the rest of the year. And if so, how are you liking his matchups for the remainder of the last 6 weeks?
It's intriguing. He looked really good against the Athletics, mm-hmm. but away from West Sacramento, a lot of people have looked really good against the Athletics, right? Athletics look like they're unbeatable, the hitting lineup when they're playing at home. But on the road, they've struggled at times, but it's a promising outing. So I think it's something that we definitely need to pay attention to. You know, with these matchups coming up, it's really hard. The Washington Nationals are not going to give him any run support. They have been horrendous recently. You know, coming into the season, I was kind of a fan of the lineup. Early mm-hmm. in the season, they had some spots where they did look really good. Recently, the lineup as a whole has been absolutely horrendous. So he is not going to get much run support. It does not appear. But he's at Kansas City, who has been up and down. The lineup looks really good some days. Other days, they can't hit anybody. And then Philadelphia over the weekend. The Philadelphia scares me. It is at Washington. That helps. I think in 15-team leagues, you have to consider this two-step. In 12s, sure. I would try to stay away from it if I can.
Yeah, looking a little bit further, it looks like he might even get a double step against Philadelphia, skipping over the Mets and getting Philadelphia the week after. Probably missing out on the Yankees and then facing off against Tampa Bay. So you like that one a little bit more. Possibility he gets Tampa and Miami back to back. If that all kind of lines itself up, if he misses Miami, then he's facing off against the Cubs. So, I mean, it's hard to extrapolate that far out, but I do expect Cavalli to be up the remainder of the season. I'm not sure why they, make this kind of call at this point, in his career, and don't let him just kind of run with it and see what they got.
I agree.
All right. So for after the call-ups, we do have a couple of guys missing from their rotations and lineups. Actually, these are both rotations. We'll start in Cincinnati. They lose Nick Lodolo earlier this week to the IL with a blister on his finger. Where else do we care about if blisters are on a pitcher's body? So what kind of impact is Nick Lodolo's missing in action from Cincinnati's rotation having, and is there anybody worth kind of monitoring for his starts?
There's not much at the moment. Cincinnati is at home all week versus Philadelphia and Milwaukee, two good lineups. Not much there I'd really be looking for. And it's guys we know. So since they just acquired Zach Littell and then Chase Burns becoming the third pitcher in baseball history to have 10-plus strikeouts in four of his first eight starts, pretty good company. I think it was Fernando Valenzuela and... I forget the other Bob Gibson. Maybe I saw it posted on social media earlier. So I apologize. I do know Fernando was one of them, of the other two to do that in baseball history. So that is absolutely amazing. So I think their rotation is set, and it's guys that do not have availability. And I probably wouldn't be looking, with the lineups they're facing at home this week anyway.
Yeah. I mean, with, Nick Martinez, I believe, was the one end up going into the bullpen. You don't think this kind of brings in an opportunity for him to come back? Not that we are interested in that fact, but do they basically what you're saying is the Reds acquired enough pitching to kind of fill this gap without having to fill it in house.
And we may see Hunter Green back this week as well.
That's true. So, he's right around the corner.
Yep.
The other one that's missing, another acquired, this actually, because of this acquiring, may have actually opened up the door for Cade Cavalli to make his 2025 debut. And that was Mike Soroka moving over to the Chicago Cubs. Unfortunately for the Cubs, they are without their newly acquired pitcher. He hits the IL with a shoulder strain earlier this week. That's all we got. We were talking about that right before. There's not really any updates that we could find as far as how he's progressing or if he's progressing or what the severity is. Just discomfort in the shoulder turned into a shoulder strain, and he's on the IL. For how long, we're not quite sure. What kind of impact is him missing from the Cubs rotation having so far, and what you expect to see over the course of the next at least week or two?
We thought they would be getting Jameson Taillon back, who's having a great season. And now it looks like he's may have had a setback. I haven't seen much news on that yet. I saw he was removed from a game early in his rehab assignment. So that means that, you know, Jason at Roster Resource has him going with Ben Brown. And that may be what they do have to do. They'd much rather have Jameson Taillon, obviously.
Sure.
The way those guys have performed so far this season. But we're going to have to wait for some news here on Jameson Taillon, I believe. I haven't seen more. Maybe you have, other than him being removed early from a rehab start.
No, that's unfortunate. You kind of nailed it. You'd rather have Taillon back at, you know, 90% than probably at least what you've been getting out of Ben Brown at this point. So we'll see how that kind of features and how much interest we get over the weekends on a Ben Brown spot start into the rotation, because, you know, he was dropped, added throughout the course of the season with his roller coaster of a ride that has been the 2025 season for Ben Brown. Couple of guys that we are expecting to see back. You talked about Taillon being one that you expect to be back. Hunter Green, maybe a little bit sooner than that without any kind of anything hitting roadblocks. But Victor Robles, who's been out for quite a long time, he is starting a rehab assignment next week for the Mariners. But because he's been out for so long, they are expecting to get at least 40 to 50 at-bats throughout his rehab stint. So he should be, you know, in his rehab for probably the maximum amount of time, before he comes back. Can we trust Victor Robles to be a, you know, stolen base threat, top of the lineup, in Seattle when he does return at this point in the season? And does Seattle need him, to kind of be that guy for that stretch run?
They haven't needed him over the past couple of weeks. They haven't even needed him for the stolen bases over the past couple of weeks. They got Josh Naylor stealing bases left and right. But he may be injured. So maybe we need Victor Robles. They may need Victor Robles for the stolen bases, depending on how this goes with Josh Naylor. I think he's just banged up a little bit, and it shouldn't be too bad. But 40 to 50 at-bats, that's a minimum of 2 weeks. And that doesn't start till next week. So we're already talking September,
right?
So am I going to keep an eye on it as we get closer? Yes. Am I really interested right now? Man, I was so disappointed. I had a lot of Victor Robles. I expected him to do what he did last season. And, but after this long of a layoff, and with, we're only going to get him for 2 to 3 weeks, it appears, I'm keeping an eye out, but I'm not interested yet.
Yeah, this is a situation where it's like we're getting too deep into the season for you to be making a 2 week spec play, especially for what ultimately could end up just being one or two categories. Even if he does jump right into the top of the lineup, which I don't expect, at least not for the first week he's back, unless something happens at the top of their lineup where they are desperate for it. Another rehab assignment that's expected next week is your boy, Jacques Caglianone. Yeah, I think I got that. He's expected to go on rehab assignment next week. I do not expect him to be on his assignment as long as Victor Robles. In the meantime, They also signed Bobby Dalbec to a minor league deal. I start with Bobby Dalbec. I mean, do you expect Bobby Dalbec? The Royals have been doing some weird stuff where they've just been kind of signing and putting people in random spots. But is there any avenue for Bobby Dalbec to be called up to Kansas City before the end of the season?
Kind of doubt it.
Yeah, right.
Right. They're pretty set. They're pretty set at the corners and designated hitter.
Right.
I see that he has played two games in the outfield in his entire career. That's what the Royals need. So I don't see much happening with Dalbec. He's having a good year in the minor leagues, slugging well over 500. So maybe he hits his way into the lineup somehow. But it'd be really nice if he could play right or left field.
This is what Bobby Dalbec does, though. Like while he was with the Sox, he would get sent down to Worcester or Pawtucket even at one point.
Kill it,
come back up and be like, who is this guy? With the impending return of Jacques here, he slots. I mean, you say you need the outfield, but he hasn't. Like, there was a time where we thought he'd be playing outfield, or they've been trying him out there. Do you expect him to get pushed out into a corner outfield slot, or to get pushed into a rotation at first base DH?
Maybe a DH start here and there. I think usually we see Vinny Pasquantino, of course, at first base. Sure. And they can put Salvador Perez at first base rather than designated hitter, give him a break from catching at times. That way, that opens a lot. So I think he probably gets some there. And I agree, he should be back up quickly. I don't think the Kansas City's going to wait to see what he can do. After they didn't sell at the deadline, they didn't do a whole lot buying either. It was encouraging what they did, that they were going to try to go for it. So far, not working out. So we may start to see them doing other things. For instance, it's not even on a rundown anywhere, but I don't know if we're going to see Cole Reagans.
I mean,
okay. Not much news on him. That. We were hoping to have him back around now or within the next couple of weeks, and there's not a lot of news out there about it. But if they continue to falter here, they're going to start doing different things, is my point. So, I expect to see him back out in right field.
Yeah,
when he returns.
He was spending all of his time before the injury, of course, as well. That's how they got him up in from AAA, kind of forcing his hand. Well, he was forcing their hand with bat, and so they made room for him in the right field, and he's been playing that ever since. So makes a whole lot of sense there. Another rehab that we are going to see starting on Sunday is Alec Bohm of the Philadelphia Phillies. He's been out with a broken rib after being knocked out by Yu Darvish earlier in the season. So he's been coming back from that. We'll see how long that rehab starts, but I mean, he'll slot right back in to third base on Philadelphia. No.
Yeah. And hopefully they find a way to get us some Otto Kemp playing time, at least the short slide of platoon. And that's probably what it'll be relegated to somehow. That's unfortunate. I know his playing time has dropped off a little bit recently. He sat three of the last seven games, but when he was in there, he was giving us a little bit of value for a while. They used him in the outfield earlier in the year, Otto Kemp is going to be the one that loses out.
Yeah, sorry, Otto. Use him while you can, but Bohm, I don't know if he'll
same
the full week.
Same with Sosa as well. Sosa is when we can get him in our lineups because of the matchups, and we think he's going to get the playing time, he's been pretty valuable player for us, especially in 15 team leagues this season. He's going to lose out here as well.
Sure. Philadelphia also expecting to get back part of their rotation with Aaron Nola starting at AAA Lehigh Valley on Tuesday. And that is expected to be his final rehab start. before coming back to Philadelphia, which I believe may line him up for a start. I don't have a schedule, but would that give him a start on
at Sunday? Washington?
Yes.
At Washington next weekend.
So,
yeah, absolutely. So typically somebody that was performing as Aaron Nola was prior to going on the IL, I wouldn't be throwing him in my lineup right away. First game coming back off the IL. But if I get this Nationals lineup right now, I'll throw him out there and hope he goes five innings.
Yeah. We all saw what Jacob Lopez was able to do just the other day with his 10 strikeout game after four pretty dismal starts. Washington has a opportunity. They have the ability to do that for a pitcher, right? Just kind of right the ship just for existing. All right. We got a couple other smaller pieces of news, and we're going to get to those things right after this break. All right. Another return to the rotation here, all done with rehab, expected to start here on Saturday, is Michael King for the San Diego Padres. They just got Nestor Cortez as well. So this lineup seems to be pretty, this rotation seems to be pretty set. Is King kind of coming in here and knocking anybody out, or do you expect him to just kind of slot in and everybody just kind of moves back a day?
That's what I see. We get Pivetta tonight, Friday. Michael King, Dylan Cease. I really am interested in this Boston start for Michael King because next weekend he lines up at the Dodgers. The Dodgers have kind of been up and down at times, but at the Dodgers with the home runs that are hit in that ballpark, depending on what I'm not so sure I'm all in on that start for Michael King at the LA Dodgers next weekend. I think if he handles things well on Saturday versus Boston, you have to do it. But if things don't look good versus Boston, I don't think I send him out versus the Dodgers next weekend.
Yeah, that's a pretty poor first two starts back, right? Yeah. In Fenway and then against the Dodgers, no matter where you're at. San Diego's putting up runs and they're going to give them a little bit of support here, maybe more than they would have before the IL stint, but that's still not two matchups I really want to be my pitcher to be facing when they coming back from the IL.
Deep leagues, you're ecstatic getting back and you're throwing absolutely. Them
I mean, you've been waiting, you've been wringing your hands.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, one more return to the IL as we move a little bit backwards in topics here. Johnny DeLuca, as quickly as he returned to the Tampa Bay lineup, he has been removed, hitting the IL with a hamstring strain, pretty much playing every day since coming back. He missed 4 days early on, but he's been starting in center field for the last 7 or 8 games. Now with him being back out without the flexibility of Jose Caballero, we see Tristan Peters being called up from AAA. He started in his place today on Friday, also batting in that fifth spot a little bit higher than where DeLuca would normally hit. So are we expecting this to be a 1-for-1 trade-off with Peters taking over for DeLuca, or is there anybody else that can kind of play center field for the time being?
Chandler Simpson, I think, moves back to center field most nights. He's the designated hitter here on Friday. I think we're going to see Chandler Simpson back out there. Peters can play center and Simpson stay in left field at times as well. Jake Mangum, if Tristan Peters is going to play every day, we'll continue to lose a little bit of time. But he could gain a start or two a week here as well. But if he's healthy and he missed those games last weekend, I think Chandler Simpson is back to be in a strong side platoon play for the Rays, playing versus all righties.
Yeah, Chandler Simpson missing a little bit of time, dealing with a finger issue. Had no problems, I guess, running and sliding, but he had a problem gripping the bat. So he only missed a couple days, but he's been back in the lineup for the last three, leading off. So not too worried about that situation. But if that means he's DHing today, if that means he DHs to keep him out of the field just to, you know, mm-hmm. keep things a little bit healthier, then I wouldn't be too surprised about that as well. Last small one here, very in line with the Bobby Dalbec signing. Atlanta claimed Vidal Brujan off of waivers. I didn't even realize Vidal Brujan was with Baltimore at the time. And Baltimore was the one that sent him packing. Atlanta claims him up because of everything that's been going on in Atlanta with injuries, both in the rotation and in the lineup at times. Is there an avenue for Brujan to be at least somebody that you're watching?
Watching, yes.
Sure.
Yep. I think that's the best way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah, just like I said, I didn't realize he was with Baltimore when I saw the news that he was claimed off of waivers from Baltimore. So not somebody that I'm putting a lot of stock into, you know, being relevant between now and the end of the year. I will give a shout out to Uncle Ted. I think this is a great thing to keep an eye on as we get closer and closer to the mid-August, where we get mathematically closer to the opportunity for players to be called up and retain their rookie eligibility by staying under, 120 at-bats and 40 innings, or maybe it's less than 40 innings, to keep rookie status for 2026. So we've been seeing that since some of the rule changes have taken effect over the last couple years, and we start seeing these call-ups happen in mid to late August. It also gives contenders the opportunities to call up some really big names because they could be on that roster before the end of August and be playoff eligible as well. So good. You just thing to keep an eye out for as we are looking at bid options. And I'm sure it'll be a hot topic of conversation come next week as we get a little bit closer to that date. Obviously you can't bid on any of these players in the NFBC because they haven't made their debut yet, but it is a situation where you want to, as Uncle Ted suggests, maybe save a little bit of money for a mini hammer when it comes to some of these names that might be coming up around that time. How much energy or effort are you putting into kind of saving for that kind of an event, Kevin? Or is it just like, hey, if I happen to have some extra money, I happen to have some extra money? What's your overall mentality for for this like unofficial date coming up in the next week or two?
Yeah, I'm not saving for that. In the leagues where I have it, it will be helpful. I am right now just concentrating on making sure I have my few dollars left for the past couple of weeks so I can go $2 on players I need. And other than that, grabbing what I need right now on a weekly basis and not worrying too much on what might happen, because we don't even know who, what positions they play, what categories they will help us in. We're really focusing on categories now, right? With 6-7 weeks to go. No idea which of these guys will end up being available. Sure, we're going to speculate on that.
Sure,
but I'm not spending my money on it that speculation or saving my money for that.
Yeah, I think one the strategy you kind of led off that response with was kind of hits the nail on the head. It's great to be able to have enough money to place bids every week for the last 2 or 3 weeks in September, but it's even better to be able to have that $2 that you get for every bid, because there's a ton of players in your leagues that are gonna just be bidding the dollar days, and if you can just bid a dollar more, if you just have a little bit more to budget for that, you'll win most of your bids throughout the course of the last 3 or 4 weeks of the season, and that's when you know exactly what kind of categories that you are looking for. All right, so we got some great options here for this the 21st Fab run of the season, with just about 6 after this to go. And you know what, we'll just get ahead of ourselves. Before we do that, we're going to take another quick break. All right, Kevin, let's get right into it. Of course, we went over a bunch of news. And if you're not listening to the First Pitch podcast and or the Plus Pitch podcast, what are you doing every single day? Not this week. Nick Pollock's been out in Austria, so he has not had the time and the time difference to get that out there this week. But First Pitch podcast has been out every single day. Make sure you're listening to that for all the news and updates that'll help you make the decisions every single day, especially in those daily leagues, for your pickups, for your lineup changes, etc. But for this weekly pickup, Kevin, we need some power. We need home runs. We need RBIs. A couple of options out there. Who are you eyeballing? Who you got?
Yeah, a couple of guys that are fairly heavily rostered in 15s. A lot of availability in 12s. Ryan Mountcastle is back, and he only had two home runs and almost 200 plate appearances before the injury, but already one since his return. And we expect Ryan Mountcastle to hit with power, especially what we've seen with that ballpark this season after the last couple that really seemed to affect Ryan Mountcastle. I think we're going to see more power out of him the rest of the way. Uncle Ted will love this one. Nathan Lukes has been leading off versus righties for Toronto. Five of his 10 home runs since the All-Star break as well. So he's getting the playing time and taking advantage of it. And since I just shout out Uncle Ted, I am going to also bring up, I didn't know where to put. I just really didn't know where to put CJ Kafis on this list. I was definitely bringing him up on the show. Uncle Ted just put him in the chat here. Little bit of power in the minors. He's got 14 home runs and less than 400 plate appearances so far this season. He really was hitting with power at AAA after he got that promotion. Less than 300 plate appearances and 13 of those 14 home runs. So we may see some power out of CJ Kafis. Looks like he's going to be the right fielder, at least versus righties for Cleveland. So playing time, and he exhibited at least moderate power in the minors. So I am intrigued there. It's more of, you know, 14 home runs, four stolen bases, but the runs and RBI are there with a 300 batting average. I could put him in opportunity because of the all around, kind of an all round, won't hurt you anywhere, little bit of help everywhere type guy. But I'll go ahead and mention him now because he does have those 13 home runs and less than 300 plate appearances at AAA.
Yeah, and that opportunity that you talked about with Nathan Lukes is kind of eye-opening, and the fact that he's been leading off against righties and all that power coming since the All-Star break. It's a nice little kind of shout out to them for actually making the adjustment and taking advantage of his success. And hopefully everybody in those 12 teamers can do that. So as well, but still about 25% of leagues in 15 teamers still available. So always check.
Yes.
But that's enough power for now, Kevin. We need some speed on the base paths, stolen bases, runs scored. Of course, that's part of it as well. A couple guys on here that you got on your list that are a little bit more available. And it's interesting because, you know, for years we've been saying like you can stream stolen bases, you can always find guys, but for a good pocket, it felt like it was hard to like find somebody that you could plug in every single week. It's nice to see that we've got a couple of options here for one of the last fab periods. Who you got?
Yeah. Daniel Schneeman has been playing really well for Cleveland, 61% rostered in the main events. So that's my number I use there in 15 team leagues, as we do each and every week. Only 4% in the 12 team online championships. So he's my top choice where he's available. I'm bringing up Kyle Isbell here because the Royals face righties all but one game this coming week. So he will be in the lineup. This is a guy I've always thought should steal more bases at the major league level, and he really hasn't. But over the past week and a half, they've started to turn him loose. It's just a couple of stolen bases, but what was encouraging to me was he had a caught stealing in there, and then they let him take off again the very next day and get that stolen base. They have the White Sox coming up. They're bottom five in stolen bases against with Teal and Cuero there in Chicago. Mm-hmm. So I think Kyle Isbell steals a base or two this coming week, and he's available everywhere.
Yeah. And since we're just making this the shout out to Uncle Ted show, Jacob Marcy. Yes, we talked about him last week. Jacob Marcy being obviously on fire. So that was a nice little call out last week, Kevin. If he's still available in your league, obviously he's going to be a big bid, both in your 12s and 15s, where he still might be available. So keep an eye out for him as well. All right, we've got some more opportunity ahead of us besides just Kavis, but let's look at the schedule ahead. And of course, as always, there are no teams that have just five games once again. So good job, MLB, for continuing that trend throughout the season. And I actually think my notes here are... Yeah, all right. So a couple teams with seven games: Detroit, Minnesota, Philadelphia, Washington, Arizona, and Colorado. Colorado is on the road to start the week, but they host Arizona for four over the weekend. Cincinnati will be home all week, so Philadelphia gets to come in to Great American Small Park, and then Milwaukee Brewers get to extend their power surge, or their winning streak probably, in Cincinnati as well. Tampa Bay will be leaving George Steinbrenner Field empty for the entire week as they head to West Sacramento and San Francisco. They just go to the Bay Area, yes, and go to West Sacramento and then San Francisco. Whereas the Athletics minor league team, minor league stadium will be full against Tampa, but then they head to Baltimore. And they do have a game against the Angels, I believe, as well. So a lot to take in there. And anything else that you might want to consider, Kevin, who's got a good opportunity ahead of them and good matchups and what have you?
No, that is my bad. I put the schedule in there, Adam. They do not go to Baltimore, the Athletics. They All have right. six,
Thank you.
Six home games, three versus Tampa, three versus the Angels. My
there
bad.
There it is.
I got a couple of guys here, and that's kind of why I was looking for a place for CJ there. But first of all, Mike Yastrzemski, I love this move by Kansas City. He's led off the last two games, including Friday, led off the game with a home run on Friday night. They've dropped Jonathan India, who has not done what they traded for Jonathan India to do so far this season. Dropped him down to the bottom third of the order. If Mike Yastrzemski is going to be leading off versus righties, and I mentioned those five out of six righties for Kansas City this week, love that opportunity for him. He's available in 40% of main events and close to 90% of 12-team leagues on the NFBC format. JJ Bleday, I love the Athletics getting these games at home this week. Pretty nice matchups for them, but I'm really curious that JJ Bleday now has sat for two consecutive games, one versus a righty, one versus a lefty. I'm a little confused, so definitely want to keep my eye on the news over the weekend. Maybe he's banged up. I haven't seen anything about that yet. But those three starts he had earlier in the week, he came back from AAA hitting and right in the middle of the order in the cleanup spot for two of those three games. So I'm curious of why he's sitting versus a lefty and versus a righty starter on Thursday and Friday nights. Monitor that over the weekend, because if he's getting playing time, JJ Bleday in the cleanup spot with six home games for the Athletics is amazing.
Yeah, I always like to see the moves that these teams make throughout August and September in their lineups. We, you know, obviously you talked about Nathan Lukes moving into the leadoff spot, Yastrzemski getting the leadoff spots in Kansas City now as well. So just interesting to see kind of like the moves, especially I obviously it can happen with a contender or somebody rebuilding or not contending, but keep an eye on. Things don't always stay the same, especially as we get closer and closer to elimination in the playoffs. All right, we got some pitching to go over. Of course, you're going to spend your money on the pitching, especially throughout the course of the last couple of weeks. You got to fill all those slots, get as many wins and strikeouts as you can. We'll get to all those recommendations after this break. All right, Kevin, get right into it with our volume picks here. Your wins and your strikeouts, your two starters, your vultures, whatever you want to target. Who is out there that can get us some wins and some strikeouts in this upcoming week?
All right, I'm going to start off with my 12-team league guys. Chris Paddock, who we saw have a nice stretch for a month and a half, 2 months there, and then kind of fall apart. He had two really good starts right before the trade deadline, and then in his first start with his new team versus his old team, he got lit up pretty good. But he's got nice matchups, even though one of them is versus Minnesota, who just got to him pretty good. I'm not running away from at the White Sox at Minnesota with how Chris Paddock has pitched in two of the last three games and that great stretch we saw from him earlier in the season. I'll take this risk here. He's 100% rostered in the main event, but only 48% in 12-team online championships. Another two-step for a guy that was pitching really well and then got blown up in his last start, first start with his new team. We got a pattern here. Bailey Falter in Kansas City. He gets the Nationals and the White Sox, both in Kauffman Stadium. So I see a rebound coming from him and love that two-step. He's 93% rostered in 15s, but only 17% in 12s. And then this is matchup-based, but I like this. Mike Vassell has made three starts this season, and he has not went over four innings. He has went over four innings in relief appearances multiple times throughout the season. Not a ton, but a couple of times. And he is versus Detroit and at Kansas City. I like this two-step in deep leagues where you really need one more starter. You're really chasing wins here. I'd rather use it, if I can, I would rather use a reliever from our next category, but if I'm chasing wins, he's available everywhere and I'll take that shot with these matchups.
Yeah. I mean, Detroit's obviously still a good team, but going to Kansas City, this late in the season, before Jacques comes back, before any other adjustments are made, it's worth the gamble, especially in those deeper formats. All right. Well, you alluded to it. We got our ratio category. We need to chase ERA. We need to stabilize our whip, wherever you stand in the standings. No, they can always move up or down. People can catch up to you just by you standing still. So if you're not stabilizing, there's always an opportunity for those below you to jump over you as well. So who might you be targeting at this point, or who do you add to the list here for ERA and WHIP stabilization?
Yeah, this is very everything every week of the year is league dependent, but this category this week is especially league dependent because who was dropped in your league last week? Was Ryan Helsley dropped? If he was, he fits this category perfectly, right? So some of these guys that we haven't brought up in a long time, but we assume they're at the top of our waterfalls in the leagues where they are available, right? We had a whole lot of shuffling going on last week. So the Griffin Jacks, Brian Abreu, right? These guys that we always think of in this category, of course, look for them. And then people that were speculating on saves guys, are they being dropped? Right. Anybody in the all these New York Yankees relievers, right?
Not Jake Bird.
Who's being held in your league? Who's not in your league? Right. So guys like, if Mason Miller got dropped because he's no longer the player rostering him in your league doesn't think he's going to get saves anymore, go grab him. But yeah. That's where I'm at as far as guys that Rick Graham has moving up his list on his holds article from Thursday. I really like Stephen Okert. I had him move up quite a bit. into this. I'm moving down the list a little bit. Guys I know will be available in most leagues. Brendan Little, we've talked about him earlier in the year. He's performing very well again. Probably the biggest mover on his list this week. This is his holds list, but it's a good place to start. We've talked about this multiple times this season. Eric Sabrowski, right? Huge move into the top 25 from just barely inside the top 40 on this list this week. So these are the guys that I'll look at if the top guys aren't available in my leagues. But I think in most leagues, if you go down the list, sure, Mason Miller is highly rostered. Griffin Jack's highly rostered. Brian Abreu, a little less rostered, but some people are holding him for in case something happens to Hader, right? Abner Uribe. If all of these guys are rostered in my league, which is not going to be very many leagues, that every single one of the top 10 of these guys is rostered, but when they aren't, drop down a little bit to guys like Sabrowski and Brendan Little. So, yeah, that's where I'm at there.
The extra shout out for Rick Graham. He threw out another shout out in the PL Discord as he was posting his top 30 and bottom 30 relievers over the last 2 months. He specifically called out Brent Hedrick over in New York. Mm-hmm. I mean, you mentioned like anybody in that New York bullpen, and honestly, that, you know, New York bullpen's not even the best bullpen after the trade deadline as some of the other ones that have been made, but. Brent Hedrick has been just complete fire, over the course in recent history. So if his usage isn't that high over the weekend, there's another name that you can add to the list throughout the course of next week. Especially since, as I tried to say earlier, Jake Bird, who got blown up earlier for the Yankees, did get sent down by the Yankees after being acquired by Colorado. So he was not one that worked out well after the trade deadline, but, you know, I'm sure he'll still be useful later on down the stretch as well. Well, you talked about guys that were, you know, moved for, you know, away from closing positions into closing positions, what have you. Speculation there. These aren't guys that a lot of the guys like the Mason Millers, the Griffin Jacksons, they still have value in the ratios. But any other closing opportunities kind of ironing itself out that you're at least had been watching or still are continuing to monitor? Because there will be some changes in the last couple weeks of this.
Right. And I'm not so sure things are completely ironed out, but that's where we get our opportunities here. Right. So like last week we talked about Hunter Gaddis, in Cleveland, right? Cade Smith, the top choice. And Cade Choice is the top choice for Cleveland, I believe. But he had pitched back-to-back games, and Gaddis got – he actually got two saves since we recorded that. He had one last weekend and then one for this week. I think he'll continue to snag one here and there. We've seen Keegan Aiken in Baltimore. Little shaky recently, maybe that's an understatement, but it's his job still, barely, I think. We've seen David Bednar look like he might be the ninth inning guy in that Yankees bullpen we talked about, and he may have been dropped in some spots, people just assuming he would not get saves. Kyle Finnegan, surprisingly to some, I think a lot of people thought Will Vest would be the guy for Detroit. So like I said, with the ratios guys, same goes for some of these closers. Now in 15 team leagues, did these guys get dropped? Probably not. Very few times. But in some more shallow leagues, they may have been dropped right away. I think the biggest one is probably, it does appear that Phil Maton or Maton, I never could pronounce his last name correctly, I don't think, in Texas might be taking over that job. It's only been one save this week this far, but it looks like he could be the guy there. So there are several options this week, in my opinion, at least for a bit of a spec. Jojo Romero did get the job. We were told he would have the job, and that has been the case. We talked about Kendall Graveman last weekend, maybe getting a shot here, and that does appear in Arizona. And this is why I completely understand the people that say still to this day, even though the as an industry, we've kind of evolved into taking early closers, I still understand the concept of not spending in our draft, whether it be an auction or a high draft pick, on closers, because this time of year, I we're impatient. And I'm talking about, when I say we, sure, I mean me. I am impatient. I would have been going nuts. I would have already punted saves and been trying to just crush wins and strikeouts in my league if I was in a spot where I needed multiple of these guys by this point. But I think this is a good lesson for us. This is possible. This happens every year.
Every year.
I don't have the patience to wait this long to start accumulating my saves. And you still need some throughout the year. There's only, 7 weeks left in the season. But I think maybe, and I didn't do it in every draft, but I tried to get two upper tier closers in quite a few.
Sure.
I think I'm going back to just one and then convincing myself I can be patient, but yep, I got to wait until August 8th. It's going in my notes for next year right now.
There you go. two other situations that are, I feel like they're probably still up in the air / maybe not care about. Colorado did lose Seth Halverson to the IL. And it appeared, I would assume Victor Vodnik kind of takes over that role, though there hasn't been an opportunity for him or anybody else for that matter in Colorado. So whether or not you're spending any money on him or anybody in Colorado is really up to you. And then Minnesota situation, when they lost pretty much any option that they had at the deadline, we all kind of, I think we kind of assumed Cole Sands was kind of the man. Justin Topa did get a save on Tuesday, where Erasmo Ramirez got the first save opportunity on this past Sunday. This will be a situation. I think we said this last week too in Minnesota. It's like, I don't think anybody's going to lead the team in saves between now and the end of the week. If everybody in that bullpen has two saves by the end of the season, nobody will be surprised. Are you spending any time or energy on the Minnesota bullpen otherwise?
I am not.
No. Okay. There you go. No.
This is a great question in the chat from James. Okay, he's in a week-to-week categories league, and his playoffs begin early September. Cole Reagans is in his IL spot now, but he has Nick Lodolo just went on the IL. Should he drop Reagans to hold on to Lodolo in that spot? As crazy as this sounds coming from a Royals fan, I say yes. The latest update on Cole Reagans still says best case scenario late August. One, that's best case scenario. And two, he just stretched out to throwing long toss from 120 feet. He hasn't even thrown off flat ground yet, let alone a mound, let alone live hitters. I think I make that move. Yeah, unfortunately, I would hate it, but I think I make that move.
In a single season, non-keeper, dynasty type of situation. Yeah. He could end up doing more harm than good if you do hold on to him and he makes a start for you in, say, the second round of your playoffs. He's not ready and it's still ill. I'm in a weird situation in my head to head. I have Cole Reagan, same exact situation, except it's dynasty. Obviously I'm going to hold on to him. We have a weird wrinkle where we can actually put guys that are on the 60-day IL. I can put onto what we call the long-term IL, and that basically removes him from my roster, but saves him for next year. Right. So if I need the roster,
so if he comes back, yeah, in September, you won't have,
I wouldn't be able access to use him anyway. Yeah. And I'm considering doing it just so that I'm not tempted and I gain a little bit more flexibility to use that roster spot that I would have had to force him up. And I don't know. So I have more time to worry about that because he's not going to come off the 60-day IL until, as you mentioned, at the earliest, late August. So I got a couple of weeks to make that decision. I agree on your assessment for James for a 1 year deal, 1 year league, as much as it'll hurt. These are the tough decisions you have to make. Yeah.
I think the worst case scenario, if you make that move, is Reagans is pitching the week of your championship. If you make it that far, and you might wish you had him then, but I think you're better off to get to that championship if you make this move.
You got to get, yeah, you got to make it there first. I will say the worst case scenario is your opponent ends up being the one that picks him up and then he's facing against you. And then you have to root against him, even though you've been rooting for him all season. Oh, that hurts. All right. Well, that's a nice little segue into the wild card section. And I think the wild card section, maybe next week and the week after, will be probably filled with a little bit more prospect heavy talks, as we mentioned earlier, as we start seeing rumors of guys that are going to get called up. But Kevin, who is in your wild card section this week?
Yeah, I actually want to bring back up somebody that we talked about really early in the season in this category. Still has not made his major league debut. And I think we might, in spite of him not really having a spot, at least his normal spot, they would have to make room for him in Cincinnati. I'm talking about Sal Stewart. Okay. I talked about him earlier in the year. Had a nice minor league career, and his power had begun to develop. That has continued throughout this season. He was just promoted to AAA recently. And one second, I'm going to pull this up. I thought I had it up here earlier, and it went away. So here we are, Sal Stewart. Yeah, 14 home runs on the season in a little over 400 plate appearances, right? But he's only been up to AAA Louisville for 18 games, and he had a great 80 games at AA. He hit over 300, 10 home runs in 80 games. That's not huge, but once again, I said this season, this 21-year-old, I was really expecting to see his power develop this season. We have seen that begin. So then he was bumped up to AAA about 3 weeks ago, 18 games, 75 plate appearances, continuing to hit over 300, four home runs already in just those 75 plate appearances for AAA Louisville. That's probably a ballpark thing, but still it's nice to see, and three stolen bases. So this is really nice. And I think he could be one of the guys that we do see here at the end of the month. The problem with that being, as a second baseman in the minors, Matt McClain plays there every day. Are we going to move around the middle infield? There's a guy named Ellie De La Cruz there. So this is the issue I see for Sal Stewart. Designated hitter, Austin Hayes covering that most days, but he can play outfield. I wouldn't be shocked if we do see Sal Stewart. I know most people don't expect to see him till 2026, but he is. If we're going to start speculating on guys we see, like Uncle Ted was talking about earlier, since I've been keeping an eye on Sal Stewart all season and things have went well for him, I'm anxious to get a chance to see him at the major league level.
Yeah, I mean, he has historically also played a little bit of third base as well, and has been playing, hasn't played third base.
They just got Ke'Bryan Hayes.
Yeah, and that was the first place I went as he's still listed as a third baseman, right, on most sites. I'm like, well, didn't they just trade for Ke'Bryan Hayes? yeah, so I'll be interested to see where he slots himself in, if and when Cincinnati makes that decision. But yeah, I think it'll be a name that we're watching as we get a little bit closer to that mark. The question is, does he have rookie, you know, of the year ability? Like, do you expect him to compete, or do the Reds expect him to compete for rookie of the year eligibility? If so, then great. If not, why wait? Like, why are we waiting? And maybe it's just because roster construction, to your point. And so, you know, we'll see how the Reds handle that, as we get a little bit closer.
Right. And it's not bunched up like the AL is. I mean, the National League, we're getting close to knowing who the playoff teams are.
Right.
But Cincinnati is the first team out right now. So how things are going with the standings will play into this as well.
Yeah, sure. All right. Well, Kevin, man, that's, you know, it's always like a little bit less exciting the week after the trade deadline, just because all the stuff is happening. But still plenty of moves to be made. Closes out here with any other added tidbits of information or advice that you might have.
I don't think anything out of the ordinary this week. Something I haven't said for a while that I've said for a lot, but I have said a lot over the years. And as things wind down, it becomes more and more apparent, right? All the little things add up to a big thing. So just make sure you're remembering to cover your bases, check on things, check lineups, make sure you're not buying into narratives that might have went away 3 weeks ago and not the case anymore, right? All the little things we talk about all season long, they're more important. It's just as important early in the season, but we don't have time to make up for our mistakes when we forget to do things anymore. We have to be more diligent at this point in the season with the teams that we have in contention, right? And I'm not saying anything that anybody listening doesn't know, but it's nice to be reminded, hey, check on all the little things this week.
Yeah, I mean, and you mentioned in there as well about the narratives and like making sure you're checking those. The trade deadline flips a lot of narratives on their head. Like lineups are completely different than they were 2 weeks ago. Rotations may be different. Bullpens are different. Like, and so when you're going, the ballparks are the same, sure. But as you're going in and getting different matchups and you're going up against teams that maybe over the last like 2 or 3 months had not been producing because their bats weren't in it, but then they go out and get 2 or 3 different. Seattle's kind of a perfect example. You talked about it last week. Like Seattle's not a lineup you wanted to face after the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. But you probably didn't mind facing them going into the trade deadline just because that ballpark, at least in Seattle, and just overall performance in general. So narratives change drastically after the trade deadline, especially when it comes to your opponents and your matchups and things of that nature. So definitely keep an eye on that and take advantage
of that other thing
on Roster Resource, where you can check out those different platoon expectations on depth charts.
Yeah, and one little thing to add on to that, you know, I'm big on looking at team hitting stats over the last 3 or 4 weeks,
right,
versus handedness of pitchers, right? And one thing that I have realized is even if a team performs well as a team versus a handedness of pitching, that it can be for different reasons, right? So right now I'm looking at since the trade deadline, which is the last 3 weeks, versus left-handed pitching, right? And St. Louis is number one. This is just an example. They have a 409 WOBA and a 167 WRC plus versus lefties since the trade deadline. That's great. And as you would typically expect, they're not striking out versus lefties to have those great numbers, a 15.5% strikeout rate, right? But then the Dodgers are also performing well versus lefties overall. However, they do have a 26% strikeout rate. So I'm more inclined to stream my pitcher versus the Dodgers, even though they are performing well versus lefties, just because they are also striking out versus lefties. And I think I have a better opportunity. Just going that one step further, just as a quick example.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. All right. Well, with all that and everything else, Kevin, I think that's going to do it for episode 226.
Less than half the time.
I know, week. Right? So if we average out the two episodes and we have a normal length episodes. And that was our target. So there we go. That's why we're here. But that is going to wrap it up for episode 226 of On the Wire. After all that and everything else, I am Adam Howe. On behalf of Kevin Hastings, thanks for listening. We bid you goodbye.